Good evening. I am going to read an adult fairy tale by the author Hans Christian Andersen. A master of telling multicolored, magnificent, magical fairy tales that inspire us and ignite such beautiful and inspiring imagery. It's time to snuggle under the blankets. Feel really comfortable. Take a deep breath and just relax your shoulders, because it's time to detach from the worries of the day and immerse yourself in a calming, soothing, and fun story. Again, the title is The Flying Trunk. There was once a merchant so wealthy that he could pave an entire street and maybe a little alley as well with silver coins. But he didn't. He had other ways to use his money. When he spent a penny, he received a dollar in return. That's the kind of merchant he was. And then he died. His son inherited his entire fortune and lived extravagantly. He attended costume balls every night, made origami dragons out of banknotes, and skipped stones on the lake using gold coins instead. With a life like that, money can vanish quickly. And it did, until finally he was left with no more than 4 pennies. He had nothing to wear but a pair of slippers and an old dressing gown. His friends no longer cared about him, since they couldn't go out on the town together. But one of them, who was nice, sent him an old trunk and said, "Pack up." That was very nice of him. But he had nothing to pack, so he just sat down in the trunk. It was an odd trunk. As soon as you pressed on the lock, the contraption would fly through the air, which is what happened to him. Swoosh! Up the trunk went with him, over the chimneys, high above the clouds, further and further away. Its bottom began creaking, and he was terrified that it would fall to pieces. He would have quite a spill. God help us! He arrived in the land of the Turks and hid the trunk in the forest under dry leaves. Then he went into town. He could do that without problems, because the Turks all walk around wearing just what he was wearing. a dressing gown, and slippers. First, he encountered a nanny with a little child. "Hello, Turkish nanny," he said. "Tell me about that large castle over there near the city, with the windows set up so high." "The king's daughter lives there," she said. "Since it has been foretold that some man will make her very unhappy, no one is allowed to see her unless the king and queen are present." "Thank you," said the merchant's son, and he went into the forest, sat down in his trunk, flew up to the roof, and climbed in through the princess's window. She was lying on the sofa, fast asleep. She was so beautiful that the merchant's son had to kiss her. The princess awoke and was dreadfully frightened, but he told her that he was the god of the Turks and that he had come down to her from the sky. She was quite happy about that. The two sat next to each other, and the merchant's son told the princess tales about her eyes. They were the loveliest dark pools, with thoughts swimming in them like mermaids. He described her forehead, which was like a snow-covered mountain with the most magnificent chambers and images. And he told her about the stork, who brings adorable babies. He told her lovely stories, and then he proposed to the princess, and she accepted right away. "But you must come here on Saturday," she said. "The king and queen will be here for tea then. They will be very proud that I'm going to marry the god of the Turks. But be sure that you have a really lovely fairy tale to tell, because my parents are especially fond of fairy tales. My mother likes them to be serious and have morals, but my father likes them to be funny so he can laugh. Then I will bring a fairy tale as my bridal gift," he said, and then they parted. The princess had given him a sword covered in gold coins that he really needed. Off the merchant's son flew. He bought a new dressing gown. Then he settled down on a spot in the forest and made up a fairy tale. It had to be finished by Saturday, and that's not as easy as you might think. At last, he was finished, and by then, it was Saturday. The king, the queen, and the entire court came to tea in the princess's rooms. He was welcomed in such a charming way. "Could you please tell us a fairy tale?" the queen asked, "one that is profound and instructive." "But one that will also make us laugh," said the king. "Absolutely," he said, and began telling his own story. "But we must listen carefully to it." There was once a bundle of matches, and they were extraordinarily proud of their noble heritage. Their ancestral tree, that is to say, The large pine tree from which they were splinters had been a great old tree in the forest. The matches were now lying on a shelf between a tinder box and an old iron pot, and they told the two of them about their youth. "Yes, that was the life back then," the matches said. "We were really living in the lap of luxury. Every morning and every evening, we drank diamond tea that came from the dew. We soaked up rays of sunshine all day long while the sun was out. And we heard stories from the little birds. We knew that we were rich because the hardwood trees were only dressed up in the summer, while our family could afford to wear green in the summer and winter. When the woodcutters came, there was a huge upheaval, and our family was scattered. The main trunk became the mast of a magnificent ship that could sail around the world if it wanted to. The other branches went other places, and we now have the job of bringing light to the downtrodden masses. This is how aristocrats of our kind ended up down here in the kitchen. My story is entirely different," said the iron pot, the one right next to the matches. "Ever since I came into the world, I've been scoured and boiled many times. I take care of substantial things, and I am, when it comes right down to it, the finest object in the house. My only joy after dinner, that is lying on the shelf all clean and shiny and having a good chat with my friends. But with the exception of the water bucket that sometimes goes down into the courtyard, all of us spend our lives indoors. Our only source of news is the market basket, but she talks in such a distressing way about the government and the people that just the other day an old ceramic pot got so upset that he fell over and broke into pieces. The market basket is surely liberal-minded, I can tell you." "Now, you've talked too much," said the tinderbox, and the steel struck the flint to it, sent out sparks. "Couldn't we just have a pleasant evening?" "Oh, yes," said the matches. "Let's talk about who among us is the finest." "No, I don't like talking about myself," said the clay pot. "Let's have some evening entertainment. I'll start by telling about something that everyone has experienced. We can all relate to that kind of thing so well. And that's a nice feeling. On the shore of the Baltic Sea, among the Danish birches." "That's a lovely start," said all of the plates. "That is definitely going to be a story that we can enjoy." "Yes, that is where I spent my youth, with a quiet family. The furniture was polished, the floors were washed, and the curtains were changed every 2 weeks." "You really know how to tell an interesting story," said the feather duster. "You can tell right away when a woman is telling a story. There's such a clean streak in it." "Yes, you can feel that," said the water bucket, who out of delight made a little hop and then clattered on the ground. The pot continued telling its story, and the ending was as good as the beginning. All of the plates clattered with joy. The feather duster took some green parsley out of the storage room and crowned the pot, knowing that this would annoy the others, and thought, if I crown her today, she'll crown me tomorrow. Now I want to dance, said the poker, and danced. God save us, how it could raise its single leg. The old chair cover over in the corner ripped just from watching it. May I please be crowned? Asked the poker. And she was. They're just commoners, thought the matches. Now it was the teapot's turn to sing. But it had a cold and said it couldn't sing unless it was boiling. But that was just snobbery. It didn't want to sing unless it could stand on the table in front of the master and mistress. Over in the window sat an old quill pen that the maid used for writing. There was nothing unusual about it, except that it had been dipped far too deeply into the ink well, and it was quite proud of that. If the teapot doesn't want to sing, the quill said, then leave it alone. There's a cage right outside with a nightingale in it that can sing. It hasn't studied music, of course, but we won't say anything mean about that tonight. I find it quite inappropriate, said the tea kettle, who was the kitchen singer, as well as half-sister to the teapot, that we should listen to a foreign bird like that. Is that patriotic? I'll let the market basket decide. I am just annoyed, said the market basket. I am more deeply annoyed than you can imagine. Is this an appropriate way to spend the evening? Wouldn't it be much better to put the house to rights? Everything would be in its proper place, and I would direct the whole show. That would be something. Yes, let's put on a show, they all said together. At that very moment, the door opened. It was the maid, and so they all fell quiet. No one let out a peep. But there was not a pot among them that did not know what it was capable of and how fine it was. Yes, if I had wanted to, they thought, it would have been quite a lively evening. The maid took the matches and struck them. God Almighty, how they spluttered and burst into flame. Now everyone can see that we are the finest, they thought. How we gleam, what light. And then they burned out. That was a lovely fairy tale, said the queen. I felt just as if I was in the kitchen with the matches. Yes, you shall have our daughter now. Certainly, said the king. You shall have our daughter on Monday. They now addressed him informally, since he was going to be part of the family. The wedding was arranged, and the night before the ceremony, The whole town was illuminated. There were rolls and pastries for the masses. Street urchins stood on their toes, crying, "Hurrah!" and whistling through their fingers. It was really magnificent. "Well, I had better do something as well," thought the merchant's son. He bought rockets, noisemakers, and as many kinds of fireworks as you can imagine, put them into his trunk, and flew up into the air with it. Boom! How the fireworks crackled! How they sparkled! All the Turks jumped in the air when they saw the fireworks, and their slippers flew up to their ears. They had never before seen such a sight in the heavens. Now they knew that it was indeed the God of the Turks who was going to marry their princess. As soon as the merchant's son landed back down in the forest on his trunk, he thought, "I've got to go into town to hear what people have to say about it." And it was completely clear why he wanted to do that. Well, people surely were talking. All the people he asked had seen it in their own way. But it had been lovely for all of them. "I saw the God of the Turks himself," one of them said. "He had eyes like shining stars and a beard like foaming waters." "He flew in a cape of flames," said another. "The loveliest angel children peeked out of the folds of it." He heard lovely things, and he was going to be married the next day. The merchant's son returned to the forest to get back in the trunk. But where was it? The trunk had burned up. A spark from the fireworks had been smoldering and caught fire. And the trunk had turned into a pile of ashes. He could no longer fly, and he could not go back to his bride. All day she stood on the roof waiting for him. And she is still waiting while he is traveling all around the world telling fairy tales. But they're not as funny as the one he told about the matches.